Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you might have heard the ads on the radio for the Aware Life Skills programmes. They've been going for many years now, and they're part of Aware's educational programme for people around the country. Joining me now are Aware's clinical director and psychologist, Dr. Susan Brannick, and David O'Connor, a spokesperson for Aware, who has done the Life Skills programme. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. So I'll go to you first, Susan, to just give us an overview of Aware's work, and particularly this Life Skills programme, which is free.
Absolutely. So, yeah, our work this week, we've launched our Aware Mental Health Week for World Mental Health Day, which is on Thursday. So as part of our programme of events, we've opened up registration to all of these programmes. So these programmes, the Life Skills, so that's virtual or in person. So depending wherever you are in the country, you should be able to access a group. They're based on cognitive behavioural therapy principles. So that's the idea. It's a therapeutic approach that focuses on the here and now and helps people make sense of depression and anxiety. So the groups themselves are not therapy groups, but they're education programs where people can learn more about the signs, the symptoms of depression, of anxiety, and really develop coping skills and resources to overcome them. They run for about 6 weeks and they are offered, as I said, in group, or you can also do it online yourself, and that's supported by a volunteer. So there's a whole range, really, of services that we can offer to support someone with depression.
So what type of people have been on these courses in the past, and what people get the most benefit from them?
I think every kind of person, you know, and I guess that's part of our campaign this week as well, part of our Hope and Focus exhibition on Thursday that we're launching. It's really to make the point that anyone can be affected by depression. You know, whatever age you are, gender, whatever category, I guess we can all experience a depression or an episode. So I suppose what we find that people find most beneficial, because they are popular programs, are really learning more about what depression is and helping to develop skills to improve mood.
And would it be beneficial as a preventative measure?
Yeah, absolutely. So for someone who's interested in their mental health, supporting positive mental health more generally, it's got really good kind of coping skills and self-care strategies that would be of interest to anyone really listening.
Yeah. David, so your story, it's where do we start?
Where do you start? Yeah.
Well, you're in good form at the moment. You're training for the Dublin City Marathon.
I am, yeah.
You did your 20-mile run at the weekend, so that's all good.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I say I'm feeling fresh, but I'm feeling good.
Yeah. And running's part of how you take care of yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, obviously just the physical side of it, but I think for me it's always been definitely a kind of a mental health practice. It's definitely something that's always helped me. We're talking about marathons there, but I think even just getting out for kind of 15, 20 minutes during the week is something that's always helped. I think just switching off, whether it's from work or whatever other pressures you may have on. So I'm very lucky I grew up kind of near St. Dan's Park.
Lovely place.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And down by the seafront and that. Yeah. So it's something you always look forward to, yeah. So, yeah.
When did you first encounter the work of Aware?
Yeah, I've been kind of involved in them, I suppose, for a couple of years now. I've done the Life Skills, so it's probably that.
And why did you sign up for it?
I think the first thing was, I think that emphasis on education was really important, because the struggles I've sort of had is I felt it was always going around in my own head. You're looking for answers that aren't there. So I think maybe getting out of my own head, getting into a space that other people were there, like you say, from different walks of life, and maybe just sitting back and trying to relax a bit and realise that it's not just all about me, that kind of everybody's had their difficulties. And I think being in that classroom space is something I really took a lot from it. In terms of curriculum, really good. But even little things when you're going in, getting like the 15-minute coffee break where you're chatting to other people. And like you say, like I remember going in and there was a guy who played for Dublin. You had a professional dancer, a business owner, stay-at-home parents. And like it was just a really good mix of people. And everyone's there because they want to be there. It's not like, you know, you're 16, you're in school and you're being forced to do something. So
You mentioned that everybody has their own difficulties. What were your particular difficulties?
Yeah, so like you said, this is where do you start? Yeah. I suppose it's probably quite long-winded.
Well, you're bullied, I suppose.
Yeah, that was the big thing. I do kind of speak openly about this. I was bullied in school for my physical appearance, which started in primary school, to be honest with you, and then kind of carried on then when I changed, went into secondary school.
Sort of name-calling and...
Yeah, just being... I accepted it. I always give the reference point. I accepted it because you grew up on this... You grew up looking at, I suppose, Hollywood films. You grew up watching... If you look at that, say something like The Goonies, is a good example because it's a childhood favourite of mine, but it's the chubby kid who was picked on in these films. That's how it was portrayed. And I felt I was just, I'm playing the role. This is what happens if you're the chubby kid. So I sort of accepted it. It went on until I was probably about 15 or 16. So it was kind of a good 6 or 7 years. It was mainly name calling, sort of verbal. There was some sort of physical abuse in there as well. I had my face smashed off a gate and had my teeth knocked out. That's worked out all right, because as you can see, my teeth are actually have grown back quite straight. So I try and look at the good
the
side
positives,
of that. Yeah. So look,
if you're listening, thank you.
So there's that side of it. But then when I was 14, then I got mugged. I had a needle held up to my neck, a syringe. So, and I was threatened. Logic would tell you now that the person who did it was obviously going through a difficult period himself. He was an addict. He was just looking for something that I had. He was never going to use it on me, and I see that now. But at the time, it was absolutely
very traumatic.
Yeah, traumatic, yeah. And like I say, I look at it now through that lens of that guy needed as much help as I probably did in later life.
And not to do a session live on radio, but that could result in PTSD very easily, couldn't it, Susan? Something like that. A mugging.
Certainly, I guess what we're seeing now in terms of people developing difficulties with depression or anxiety or mental health difficulties more generally, we're seeing maybe a significant role of early experiences, whether they be traumatic experiences. Yeah. And I suppose people have different categorizations of what classes a trauma. Do you know what I mean? So they might be... But they might not be things when people look back, well, that wasn't that traumatic, but actually it might have been for you, you know, and that might have long-reaching influences. Things are different for everybody, but I guess we're understanding depression and mental health difficulties in a broader sense now. Certainly people's environments growing up, their social circumstances, what they've lived through really are going to have an impact. You know, it's not to say it defines you, but it might influence kind of how you see yourself, maybe how you internalise some of that and maybe your self-esteem and self-value.
So your self-esteem was pretty low because you've been bullied, and then this happened.
I think one of those things is probably enough, isn't
it?
Yes,
definitely. Yeah,
that's interesting you say that. I never recognised it as trauma. It was only that was asked to me by a psychiatrist. He says, have you ever considered that or looked at it in that lens that you've been through a traumatic experience? But I don't know. Maybe I don't know if it's a bit of shame or naivety or what it is, but it was only, again, as I got a little bit older, I was like, actually... Yeah, that was pretty traumatic. Like, so as you say, it's different times now. We appreciate the conversation is maybe a little bit more.
And how
open.
Did you react to that? What sort of what were you like as a teenager then after 14?
I think in the first, probably quite happy-go-lucky, to be honest with you. Like, you probably suppress a lot of emotions. Definitely have me mood swings, which my mother, I'm sure, will attest to, like, no doubt. But I think what happened was it was more when I hit my 20s, maybe going to college, a little bit more independence and freedom. And you see how the rest of the world kind of operates outside of a school. It was sort of mid-20s I kind of had a bit of a, oh, hang on a second. I sort of let that happen to me. Why did that happen to me? Right. But the worst part of that, I suppose, is instead of being angry at the people who did it, I turned it inwards. So I took it out myself because I let it happen. It was like I should never have, you know, I should have stood up for myself or I should have done something about it. So everything was turned inwards. And then I started kind of inflicting a lot of pain on myself inwardly, which is...
So sort of like psychological self-harm.
Yeah.
What was the dialogue with yourself?
Just constantly telling myself I was worthless and useless, and then convince myself that type of stuff that happened, I deserved it because you didn't do anything about it and you looked like that, and that's what happens. I kept a diary and I gave it a name, like I called it the Hate Pages, and I just wrote in that very regularly about everything that was wrong about me, and that went on for a long time. Like, it's scary looking at it now. It was such a conscious effort. Like, if I'd have written something more positive, it could have been useless, you know? Like, it was so deliberate and so planned. And in such a strange way, it was so relieving because it's a really... At the time, it was just a warped way of trying to deal with it.
So that's how you were dealing with yourself. Mm. How were you dealing with the rest of the world?
I was still functioning. I mean, it was... Got through college, I was working. Probably a little bit lost in terms of what I wanted to do. Like, I remember getting a job in a bank because in my head, it was like, that's what successful people do. You're either, we say you're a priest, a guard, or you're at a bank. First here, weren't going to happen. So, yeah, I got a job in a bank, because I thought, oh, that's the answer. I'll be here for the rest of my days. And look, you go into an environment that's not right for you, it eventually catches up with you. Mm. And it wasn't a good fit, to say the least.
And did aggression become an issue?
No, it was more... No, he was never really aggressive. The only time aggression came out was when I was playing sport. And I actually stopped. I was an okay footballer. I wasn't anything special, but I felt I actually stopped playing because I couldn't control. Right. It was like every time I went out onto a pitch, everything spilled out. I was quite petulant. And that was where the aggression came out. But kind of day to day, it was more just melancholy, subdued, just going inside myself. But the aggression came out in sport, which, to be fair, maybe it was the best place for it to come out in.
It's controlled enough.
Yeah, it was controlled enough, I suppose. Yeah. I'll be quite annoying for everybody.
But you recognised that you were aggressive. And
yeah,
stopped
100%.
I'm just wondering because, we talk so much now about mental health. I'm wondering when you were thinking about yourself and thinking about those dialogues you were having inside your head, were you thinking, I'm unwell?
No.
Because,
again, you're going back to kind of, I suppose, 2000s and that. This was, you talk about mental health and depression was quite alien. And I got to the stage, at one point, I remember it did get to the stage where I thought something's not right here. And I looked up on the laptop or the computer. I remember looking up, symptoms of depression. And I deleted the history afterwards because I thought, Jesus, it's like looking at something you shouldn't be looking at, but... I was mortified. I was like, if somebody finds out, you'd be thrown in a padded cell. There's something not right here. So that was probably around when I was 24, 25. But up
you're
until that...
You're 40 now, so that's 16 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've come a long way since then, haven't we?
Certainly, thank God.
Yeah. And Aware have done great work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess part of our work really is trying to challenge the stigma around mental health. As we're talking about shame and self-criticism can be really, really significant impacting on depression and anxiety, mental health conditions. So we've certainly come a long way. I'd say we've probably got a bit more to go.
There's been so many conversations in the last 15 years, hasn't there? Everybody's shared their mental health story, which is great. So it means that it's less taboo. But still, when you're presented, when you're confronted with it on a one-on-one basis, there still isn't, it's not completely comfortable, I would think. What do you think?
Yeah, potentially. I guess people will have different experiences. Mm. I suppose maybe we have a responsibility as a collective society, to kind of make more open spaces where people can be vulnerable, share experiences of maybe panic attacks, of depression, of shame, of self-criticism, and not be penalised for them, whether that's discrimination or unfair treatment, not getting the job, not getting the promotion. So I think we do have a collective responsibility to make that more accessible, but also to not punish people for speaking up in whatever way discrimination might play out,
And self-criticism is one of the symptoms of depression, is it?
Well, I guess self-criticism is strongly linked to depression. Self-criticism and shame will tend to influence maybe how long depression might hang around for or how intense it might feel. And certainly our life skills program might help in terms of unpacking some of that and learning different strategies. We also have support groups that people can access across the country. So they're not so much about the education, but more just people coming together and sharing their own experiences. A bit like, as you're saying, you'd never speak to yourself sometimes the way you are. You never speak to a friend the way you'd speak to yourself.
Yes.
So maybe when people catch you maybe in a group setting, it's maybe helpful to hear that perspective from them and kind of catch yourself in it. So I guess maybe the thing to consider is there are lots of different avenues for support and help. Recovery is possible if you're experiencing any of these difficulties.
Do you still have that diary, that hate speech diary?
No, we threw it out.
And how was the dialogue in your head?
Yeah, we were talking outside there and it was saying the last kind of 2 years for me, touch wood now, has been really, really positive. I do think it comes with getting a little bit older. Maybe just learning that, nobody has it figured out. We're all just doing our best.
What you've just said there is hugely important. Because, I was reading a bit about you and you were saying when you were in the bank, you thought this is, and you mentioned it there, it was success. You were comparing yourself to other people and, and thinking they had it all and you had nothing. But then as you get older, you realise we all have our own little things going on, don't we? Nobody is perfect. Nobody is completely, it's like perfectly has perfect mental health, do they?
Well, I guess I would maybe say it's more about striving for connection and meaning in your life rather than to achieve some sort of sense of perfect.
Nothing, yes, that's what I'm saying. Perfect. There's no perfect. That's what I'm saying. Yes, yeah. And connection is hugely important, and aware allows that. And yeah.
Yeah.
And you've noticed that there's more loneliness, have you, around?
Yeah. A few years ago, again, to get out of my own head, I volunteered for a charity, like a helpline for teenagers, and the biggest thing I took from it was there were some really difficult calls, really difficult. The biggest thing though, over the course of that year I was doing it, I just realised like so many people just wanted somebody to talk to, particularly men. So it was interesting, whenever there was a match on, like a Champions League game on a Tuesday or Wednesday, that would finish at 9:30 and the phones would be hopping. It was just somebody who would watch the match and wanted to talk about it with somebody.
What, because their team lost?
No, because they just wanted to talk about it. I don't think it was the trauma of losing the match, like, but just in general, it was just really interesting because maybe it's because I'm interested in football, I kind of copped it. I was like, geez, actually, it's a match on tonight now, I wonder. And every week without fail.
There was a connection.
But definitely, you just sort of got, I definitely got it was just people wanted to tell you about their day, about what they were doing or what they're interested in, what book they were reading, real simple stuff. And they were really nice calls to get, like, in fairness. And I think the biggest thing was you're always kind of told with these calls, like, don't be afraid to listen. You don't have to keep talking or just sit back and let them talk. And sometimes that's the best call. If you say nothing and let the person speak.
Have you seen any effect of smartphones, social media? Because, you know, every day we open up the papers and we're listening to the radio and people are giving out about it. And one of the things that comes up over and over again, we don't know how this is affecting people. Are you getting any hint of how it's affecting people?
Yeah, I guess there's research says kind of has different conclusions. I think it depends on how people use the media or social media, you know what I mean, our technology. So I think it's not as straightforward as something is good or bad. You know, I guess it's going to be more complex than that. Certainly, I suppose we're seeing a rise, as you're saying, in terms of loneliness, you know, in terms of ChatGPT. I think about 30-40% of the purposes of people using that is to chat, to talk to somebody. So I guess what we're seeing is that that's across the board, you know. So I think it comes back to that idea of connection and meaning is really, really important for us as humans, for our mental health just generally. And I suppose doing that in as diverse way as possible in person tends to be better, you know. But there's lots of different avenues, I guess, if, as I was saying earlier, if someone is listening and maybe any of this is resonating, definitely kind of talking to your GP or contacting Aware, you know, for support. So I guess not getting stuck in your own head, I think, is really important and kind of being left there.
Yes. So reach out. And is it aware.ie?
Aware.ie.
Aware.ie, yeah. Had very positive experience of attending the online course for family and friends run by Aware. As parents of a young adult living with bipolar disorder, it was really helpful in bettering our understanding of the condition and how to communicate. Go away, listener. And that's one of the other courses. So there are a number of different courses. I have them listed here at the back.
So one of our popular courses as well is the relatives and friends group. So people who are worried about someone they're in relationship with, that group is for friends and relatives to learn more about the conditions of depression, bipolar and anxiety, and really to develop self-care strategies as well. So we have a range of supports based on your needs.
Listening with great interest to your item about Aware Lifestyle course, wondering if there will be courses later in the year, as I won't be able to attend October.
Yeah, so they run throughout the year. So have a look at our website for more details if you can't make the ones coming up. Yeah, so they run from January to December.
Just before we leave you, David, how would you talk to your younger self now?
Wow, I'd be a little bit kinder anyway. I think maybe, if you say, maybe no words, just give yourself a hug maybe. But maybe just, it's going to be okay, you know, it's take it easy. I've made peace with it, like I don't beat myself up in terms of what I've done or what I said to myself. I feel it's worked out okay so far. I've gone down a long road, a lot of people who have helped me, both from a, like you say, kind of relatives, friends, and then professionally as well, like just having the courage to go through counselling, go through psychiatry, take medication when I need it. And look, it's led me to here. It's I've done all right, I think. I think I've done okay. So just be a little bit kinder to myself maybe, and yeah, just it'll be all right, I think. Just simple.
Yeah. And you have a sort of a national platform now.
There you go,
is there anything you want? Is there anything you want to say to people? No, just generally. Because you have that sort of that thing that is often talked about now—that lived experience.
Yeah, I think, particularly maybe as men, like it's still a closed shop, and I don't have all the answers. I'm not the psychiatrist or the psychologist, like, but talking—it's not easy. It isn't. But it could just be the most important thing you'll do in that set time, whether it's a month or a year, whatever it may be, what stage you're at. But like, if people love you, they'll embrace it. They might not have the answers, and that's okay, I think. But even getting that first sentence off your chest, I think, is a start. We talk about mental health awareness, and you're right, there's loads of it, but we have to be careful that it doesn't get stale. And the other side of it, and I've experienced this a bit, is you start talking and suddenly it's, oh, sure, everyone's depressed. And I was like, well, maybe we should look at that as well. Like, there could be a reason for that. Yeah. Like, so we can't just push that out of the way. Like, if we've reached a certain stage, we have to keep it there. But as best you can, just try and have that. The start of a conversation is what I say. The start of it. It's very difficult to have a full-blown one, but just try and have that starting point, I think.
It's interesting what you say about the conversation on mental health going stale. And are words overused, Susan? You know, bandied about anxiety, everybody's depressed, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess there's two points in that. Maybe I would agree with David. Maybe if people are experiencing a level of suffering in a mass scale, maybe we should be looking at that, yes, in the world that we live in. And two, yeah, maybe sometimes people use words that maybe have come from a clinical kind of place and maybe are used a bit more casually. And I guess that's part of our awareness campaign. We're saying, well, depression is more than it's feeling sad or feeling not, you know, able to get going one day. It's a constellation of different symptoms that are a depressive condition. So there is making that kind of difference.
Yeah, well, that begs the question then, what is the difference between, you know, feeling a bit sad and being clinically depressed?
Absolutely. I guess the short answer I would say is that if your mood is stopping you living the life that you want, if you're disconnected from yourself, from your relationships, from your job, from enjoying anything, that's probably a sign that depression is something that might be happening or something different, you know. So there's specific signs of depression that people might want to look out for. So we know that it affects your thinking, maybe kind of negative self-critical thoughts about yourself, maybe negative thoughts about other people in the future. Certainly affects your emotions, as David said. There's as well as feeling low, that's kind of part of that constellation, but also there can be kind of this long-term irritability and agitation that doesn't kind of really shift, you know. So feeling that kind of sense of that kind of agitation a lot, as well as maybe problems with sleep, problems with diet, and also problems with behaviour. So that's the three areas: thoughts, okay, kind of feelings, and behaviour. So if you're noticing that you're checking out of things, you're withdrawing from people, or not doing the things that you used to, maybe you're not finding them as enjoyable as you used to, that can lead to a disconnection cycle. So when all of those things are in place, that's probably time to say, well, this is stopping me having the life that I want to have.
And the life skills course will fill you in on all this. So even if you're not depressed, but maybe there's a hint that you might have potential to be, this might be a good thing to do.
Yeah, or maybe if you're just interested in mental health generally, going to support it. And I guess maybe just to follow on from what David said, if someone does take that risk to share with you their experience, I guess, and you're the person hearing it, listening is doing something. So you don't have to have the answers. You can allow that space and let them speak. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, a listening ear.
Yeah. Could I add something, or do I have time?
No,
I think just quickly again, just with my own experience, I was sort of thinking there in terms of a timeline. Like, I think I spoke to a friend first for years about, he was kind of a brilliant man, Dave Curran is his name. He's a wonderful man, and he was helping me for years. And it was only after maybe getting a bit more comfortable with talking that I was like, okay, we'll push the counselling side, because you're still getting those little dips. It took me three counsellors to find someone to connect with. But I think that's important to say, like, don't panic.
But imagine if somebody's out there and they're feeling really low, and then they hear that you have to shop around for the right counsellor. That's another obstacle.
But I think the other side
it is important to say
don't get knocked off
not all counsellors are the same, and there's there's one out there for you. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Aware.ie, and it is Mental Health Week, and Thursday is Mental Health Day, World Mental Health Day. Dr. Susan Brannick, thanks so much. David O'Connor, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.